Hello and welcome back to Halfway History. Today is a special episode. In fact, it's the Christmas special. I'm your host, Jack Barabo, and today we'll be talking about the Christmas Truce of 1914. So, of course, the Christmas Truce of 1914 happened in the First World War. And just some basic context, the First World War started in July 28, 1914, when Austria-Hungary declared war on Serbia. And there's a long chain of relationships and alliances that go into the First World War, and it start nothing I'm going to get into now, but I'll definitely cover later. So what we do need to know is the Western Front. So the Western Front is what we think about when we think of World War One, or at least popular media does. It's in France and Belgium, and that's mainly the mud, the trenches, like no man's land. That whole personality that makes World War One comes from the Western Front. So, in August 1914, the German army invades France and Belgium. Belgium has an alliance with Britain, so Britain gets involved. And subsequently, for the British side, fights the Battle of Mons. And the French fight the Battle of the Frontiers, or the Frontiers Offensive, depends on what you want to call it. They then make the Great Retreat all the way back to near Paris, where they held the Germans at the Marne, then push them back a little bit, and there's our front line for the next few years of the war. All the major powers of the time, the Germans, the Russians, the French, the British, they all said that the war would be over by Christmas, thinking that they were better than the rest. And this clearly didn't work out like that. So, Christmas comes rolling along, and the war's pretty young, so morale's rather high. I mean, the British gave out a brass box from Princess Mary with cigarettes, sweets, and cards signed by her. And the Germans gave personal gifts from the Kaiser. I mean, NCOs got cigar boxes, and normal troops got very intricate pipes with the face of the prince on it. And, of course, with Christmas comes giving gifts to families. And both of the warring nations had huge enterprises startup that would deliver packages to soldiers on the front. The story mainly starts on Christmas Eve, 1914, with German singing. I mean, they started singing Silent Night. And then the British soldiers decide to try to one-up them, because, of course, you got to beat the Fritz. So decide to one-up them. And then they sing louder, and the Germans sing louder, and then it eventually just harmonizes. But this wasn't an isolated thing. This happened all along the trenches, as people started to realize that, you know, it's Christmas time. I think we should have a truce. So some officers, or maybe even some soldiers, would nervously go over the top, which at the time was a death sentence if you peeked your head above the trenches. So they would go over the top into no man's land and make truces, agreeing not to fire and shoot on Christmas Day. Now, I need to keep in mind this is mainly between the British and German. I mean, the French and Belgians weren't really having it. Their nations were the ones that were being conquered and being invaded by the German army. So the truces were unstable at best, usually just resulting in agreeing to bury their dead. Then Christmas Day came, and the British soldiers woke up to see Germans surprisingly walking around on the parapets of the trenches and in no man's land. Unfortunately, along one part of the front line, the British, who were already awake, were at their posts, and some Germans decided to leave their trenches and do what every other German did on the front and try to fraternize, but as soon as they were seen, the British soldiers gunned them down with machine guns. Unfortunately, there was no Christmas truce along that part of the front. As I mentioned about the French and Belgians, they really were not huge participants in the truce. Although one Bavarian division did let the French have mass in the middle of no man's land, and they even held fire to let a singer from the opera house in Paris come out and sing Christmas carols. While the Germans were walking around, they set out little Christmas trees on the top of their parapets with candles in them. The British, absolutely perplexed by this, decided to maybe just go out of the trenches, see if it was safe. And lo and behold, it was. I mean, at some point, some of the British just came out on their own. Other times, a brave soul would walk over to the trenches and say, hey, come join us. As most of the Germans did speak English, it was easy for the British and German soldiers to fraternize, which was not something that Sir John French of the British Expeditionary Force wanted happening. With the truce, initially, it started as just burying their dead. But things soon escalated as, you know, people started talking and soldiers started having fun. I mean, barbers used to give haircuts, and there's even a case of one German juggler putting on a show for the British soldiers out in no man's land. And there's even an incredible story of Lieutenant Thomas of the 1st 15th Westphalian who returned a Victoria Cross and letters off a dead British soldier in the trenches from an attack a few days prior. And of course, the infamous soccer match that happened in no man's land, where the 6th Cheshire Regiment recorded that the Germans won 3-2. It all started with a British soldier kicking the ball out of the trenches. I wonder how the ball got there. The Germans would exchange chocolates and sausages for cake and buttons from the British soldiers, and beer for whiskey. I mean, everybody was just trading commodities. It was even common to trade hats and buttons. Yet, of course, there were some sectors that totally didn't have it and were not really down to have the old Christmas spirit. Such as one German line when a German soldier asked his corporal if he could fraternize with the British as he heard that troops down the line were doing it. And he said, no, of course not. We're at war. You'd never do that to an enemy nation. And then that same corporal was disgusted at the fact that the army was willing to have a Christmas mass in the middle of no man's land. Corporal Hitler was weird like that. And it wasn't just the Western Front where this happened. I mean, less documented cases, but we definitely know they happened on the Eastern Front between the Russians and the Austro-Hungarians. What we do know is along the German and Russian lines, it was a mix between Germans and Russians starting the truce. Yet, when it came to the Austrians and Russians, it was mainly the Austrians who engaged in the truce. And unfortunately, we don't have any records from either Russians or Austro-Hungarians of the truce, as I think it would be really interesting to see something come out of the Eastern Front. The Christmas truce is an anomaly in human history, and if anything, it's the most human anomaly of all of them. I mean, people came together and realized that they were just human, that the war that they were fighting was pointless, as all wars really are. They realized that they're common. They share the exact same situation. Being in trenches, it's cold, it's wet, it's muddy, it's gross. And they just want to be able to share that experience with someone else, even if it means across borders. These are really people, and if there's anything to prove that they are, it's the 1914 Christmas truce. Unfortunately, millions and millions of people would go on to die in the next coming years. Most of those who were in the Christmas truce would never see another Christmas, let alone see another day outside of the war. So happy holidays from the Halfway History Podcast, and Merry Christmas. I kept this a rather short episode so I could just talk about some things real quick. I know this is a little short, A, because it's not a huge topic, and I'm just mostly spending time with family over the holidays, and B, I'd like to take out some time to talk about the future of this podcast, you know, going into 2020 and all. So I think a good place to start is the upcoming season. We just ended season one, The Old Civilizations and Early Civilizations, and now moving on to season two, Classical Civilizations. It's basically going to be a chronicalized history of Rome and Greece. And trust me, I'm not going to try to conquer those massive topics in only one episode. From there, we're going to move on to Season 3, Pagans, or Barbarians. I don't know what I'm going to call it yet, but basically enemies of Rome and non-Christians. The ones that laid the foundations of what we know as Europe today. And then, after that long season will be done, we'll be doing a Season 4 on industries, such as the textile industry, the cotton industry, tea industry. It'll be a grand old time. And then with that, and then we'll start Season 5, A World on Fire. So basically, that one's going to be chronicalizing wars throughout history, and it's going to be a pretty long one. I mean, we're going to cover everything from the Dakota conflicts to the First and Second World War to the Opium Wars. It's going to get very long and pretty intense, I think. And from there, I don't know. I could keep chronicalizing military history, which is honestly my favorite, or I could keep analyzing nations throughout history and civilizations. Only time will tell. But all I know is the next few seasons, things are going to get interesting. And I'm definitely trying my hardest to up the production value and quality of the content that goes on here. I plan on trying to get guests that say, quote-unquote, have specialties, or really focus on one topic. And maybe I'll do a few special episodes every now and then, kind of like this one. Only time will tell. And I'll see you next season, when we begin looking at ancient Greece. This has been Jack Barabo, and thank you for listening to Halfway History.